Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Mao's Great Famine by historian Frank Dikkeder investigates the catastrophic famine that accompanied China's Great Leap Forward from 1958 to 1962. Drawing on extensive archival research and prior scholarship, the book argues that mass hunger was not simply the result of natural disasters or administrative mistakes, but a man-made calamity rooted in coercive policies, political fear, and systematic deception. Dikkeder reconstructs how radical production targets, forced collectivization, and the drive to showcase socialist success distorted reporting and encouraged the extraction of grain from already starving countryside communities. The narrative highlights how local officials competed to satisfy unrealistic quotas, while ordinary people faced confiscations, punishment, and restrictions on movement that undermined survival. The book also situates the famine within the structures of a one-party state, emphasizing how violence and repression shaped everyday life during the campaign. As a work of modern Chinese history, it seeks to clarify responsibility, scale, and mechanisms behind one of the 20th century's most devastating human tragedies. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the Great Leap Forward as a political campaign with economic consequences. A central topic is how the Great Leap Forward transformed from an economic modernization push into a sweeping political campaign. The book presents the drive for rapid industrial and agricultural gains as inseparable from party ideology and the need to display success. Instead of incremental reforms, the state pursued abrupt changes in rural life, demanding extraordinary output while treating skepticism as disloyalty. The result was a system where slogans replaced evidence and production targets became political tests. In this environment, cadres were incentivized to promise miracles and punish those who questioned them. The book's framing emphasizes that the famine cannot be understood without this fusion of politics and economics. The leadership's need for momentum, the fear of appearing weak, and the readiness to mobilize society through commands, these pressures shape decisions about labor allocation, crop planning, and procurement, often with little regard for agronomic reality. The campaign logic also encouraged dramatic experiments and constant reorganization, disrupting routine farming at the very moment stability was crucial. By highlighting the Great Leap Forward as a political project that overrode technical constraints, the book clarifies how policy choices created conditions where widespread hunger became likely rather than accidental. Secondly, collectivization, communal dining, and the breakdown of rural incentives, another important theme is the restructuring of the countryside through large collectives and communal institutions. The book describes how private plots and household autonomy were reduced or eliminated, and how communal dining and shared resources were presented as symbols of socialist abundance. In practice, such arrangements could weaken incentives and erode local accountability for production and distribution. When food was pooled and rationed under political supervision, access depended less on need and more on status, compliance, and the shifting judgments of cadres. The book also highlights how the new system changed everyday behavior. Work points, public kitchens, and collective rules altered family life and undermined traditional coping mechanisms during scarcity. With reduced personal control over harvests and stored grain, households had fewer options when supplies tightened. The analysis connects these structural changes to the wider crisis, showing how the countryside became more vulnerable to shock, mismanagement, and coercion. Communal systems could also conceal shortages for longer, since hunger was managed administratively rather than through open market signals. By examining collectivization and communal dining as lived institutions rather than abstract policy, the book explains how large-scale organizational change contributed to local starvation, social tension, and the loss of resilience that might otherwise have limited mortality. Thirdly, false reporting, procurement quotas, and the extraction of grain from starving areas. The book places strong emphasis on information failure driven by political incentives. Local officials faced intense pressure to demonstrate success, leading to inflated harvest claims and staged displays of plenty. Once exaggerated numbers entered the bureaucracy, they shaped procurement demands. The state requisitioned grain based on fiction, not reality. The book argues that this mechanism turned shortages into famine because extraction continued even as villagers lacked food. Overreporting was reinforced by fear, competition among localities, and the expectation that loyalty meant delivering results. The system punished bad news, so honest reporting could be career-ending or dangerous. In that context, procurement quotas became instruments of coercion rather than administrative planning, with teams searching for hidden grain and imposing penalties. The topic also covers how the state prioritized urban supply, exports, or strategic reserves in ways that could leave rural communities exposed. The resulting feedback loop was deadly. Inflated reports produced higher quotas intensified confiscation, confiscation deepened hunger, and deeper hunger reduced labor capacity, which further harmed production. By tracing this chain, the book highlights a crucial insight about modern governance under authoritarian pressure. Disasters can be magnified when leaders receive distorted information and continue to act on it while suppressing correction. Fourthly, coercion, violence, and the control of movement during the famine. A further topic is the role of coercion in enforcing policies that sustain famine conditions. The book depicts a rural order in which resistance, complaint, or attempts to secure food could be met with punishment. Controls on movement limited the ability of starving people to seek aid elsewhere, and local authorities often treated migration as a threat to production targets and political stability. The analysis stresses that famine was not only about missing calories, but also about power: who was allowed to eat, who could leave, and who could speak. Coercive practices could include public denunciations, forced labor, detention, and intimidation, all of which shaped how scarcity was experienced. The book also examines how fear influenced communities, reducing the willingness to share information or organize relief. When survival strategies were criminalized, families and villages lost options. This topic matters because it shows why the crisis persisted even as conditions worsened. Repression could keep the system functioning in the short term by compelling compliance and suppressing visible collapse. By focusing on control mechanisms alongside economic mismanagement, the book offers a political explanation for why correction was delayed and why human suffering reached such extreme levels. Lastly, responsibility, mortality, and historical memory of a national catastrophe. The final topic centers on how to assess responsibility and understand scale in a politicized historical landscape. The book is widely associated with arguments about high mortality and the extent to which the famine was man-made, emphasizing policy choices, enforcement methods, and leadership dynamics. It also engages with the challenge of reconstructing events when archives are incomplete, records may be shaped by self-protection, and public discussion can be constrained. This topic explores the difference between a narrative of unavoidable tragedy and one that highlights agency, accountability, and preventability. The book draws attention to how decisions taken at multiple levels interacted with central directives, provincial implementation, and local abuses. It also considers how memory is managed, including the tendency to frame famine as a natural disaster or to treat it as an unfortunate but impersonal outcome of modernization. By addressing evidence, interpretation, and the politics of remembrance, the book invites readers to think about how societies face mass suffering after the fact. The topic ultimately broadens the book's relevance beyond China, raising questions about state power, truth and governance, and the long-term consequences when a catastrophe is not fully confronted in public life. In conclusion, this book is best suited for readers interested in modern Chinese history, political economy, authoritarian governance, and the human costs of radical state projects. Students and general nonfiction readers who want a clearer picture of the Great Leap Forward will find a focused account of how policy, incentives, and coercion interacted in everyday rural life. It can benefit a reader's life by sharpening critical thinking about how institutions behave under pressure, how bad incentives distort information, how fear suppresses correction, and how large systems can produce harmful outcomes when accountability is weak. Those lessons apply well beyond one country or era, informing how readers evaluate official narratives, statistics, and crisis management today. Compared with similar books on the famine, Dick Etter's work is often noted for its strong emphasis on archival-based reconstruction and on mechanisms of extraction and repression, not only on aggregate shortages. It also aims to connect high-level decisions to local experiences, making the catastrophe understandable as a chain of choices rather than an abstract tragedy. It offers a forceful interpretive framework and a detailed investigative approach that complements broader surveys of Mao-era China and comparative studies of 20th-century famines. If you would like to support Frank Dick Etter, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.